Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Monday, September the 8th, and we got a great show for you here today. My name is Magnus Teeval. I'm your host for this hour, along with
Peter R.H.
And also joining in this in the studio is Hiago Moreira.
Hi, everyone. Good morning.
And we're going to be talking to Hiago in just a minute about his recent meeting with the BC Minister of the Environment. We got a bunch of interesting stuff lined up for you. Our interview with Hiago is coming up first. We also have a story from our reporter, Danny, about the Vision Zero billboard campaign that's happening in Vancouver, also connected to the environment, which Hiago's story is as well. Gardening with Embark will be up just after the half hour. And what are you talking about today, Peter?
I'm talking a bit more, hopefully more in depth than you hear a lot about the controversy with the temporary foreign workers and a bit of a background on how that came about. And actually, just to say something shortly about it, it was actually starting in 2006 under the Stephen Harper government that it got accelerated, because this was something 1973. It existed, but it's funny that that the Conservatives are sort of being... It actually is Stephen Harper that accelerated the program as we have now and the controversies with it.
All right, that's coming up just at the end of the program. We also have Bird Note and Climate Connections and some great music as well. Welcome, Hiago Moreira, who is the the VP for
Equity and Sustainability.
Equity and Sustainability. Yes. Here at the Simon Fraser Student Society. That's one of the executive positions in the Student Society. And before we get into what's the role of the VP Equity and Sustainability?
A few different scopes. I think that the main one is to be the liaison between what we call our constituents groups that represent the marginalized people of the society and our executive body representing marginalized people in decision-making and bringing those voices into the table. So I think that's the main scope. The second one is just making sure that we are going around all of our issues policy and also working towards the sustainability of the student society.
Right. Okay, great. And just before we continue, just, you know, if you're a regular listener to CJSF, you may actually recognize Hiago because he's done a show and done a little reporting for us before stepping into this fairly important role at the Student Society. So you've been, you know, part of your advocacy is also part of your role around the sustainability portion of your position. And that's recently had you meeting with some reps from the government, including the Minister of the Environment. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Of course.
What was your goal, too? What was your...
Of course. I think that first is very interesting to highlight that this was a meeting that happened at the Board of Trade. So the Board of Trade is basically this place where our Burnaby city and business meet together to talk about their goals, how to collaborate, how to further policy that interests the business. But also, they are, in general, very committed to sustainability, especially here at Burnaby, right? So they regularly promote these kind of meetings, and they had... first, a summit focused on energy, and just after, they invited the minister to show up.
And that's Julie Douglas, Minister of the Environment.
Sorry, that's Julie Dabrosin, yes.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Yes. So because I've been to a few of these meetings of the Board of Trade, trying to network, and also to get some interesting stories from time to time, I've got also this opportunity to show up as a stakeholder for this first keynote speech that she made, the very first one as the minister for the Liberal government. And yeah, that's kind of the scope where I fit in to show up there.
Great. So when you were meeting with the minister, what were your goals? What were you hoping to speak to her about?
I think that there were a few things in mind. I'm very interested, as I highlighted before, in energy, in the scope of clean energy, and also in the context of SFU, understanding a little bit more of our role, especially with the SFU Hydrogen Hub, but also speaking a little bit, I wanted to understand more about how she, from her scope, could support us in our search to get the BC government to commit their funds for the gondola. Talking about public transits and the recent deficit of TransLink, and a few of the what we can expect from her in terms of public transport for the future.
Great, and what did you hear from her? What did she have to say?
Okay, I think that just before getting into this short conversation that I had with her, I would like a few things that she went through her speech.
Sure.
Like, she's very famous for defending, for example, carbon pricing and single-use plastics. I thought that she would address how her climate goals would fit in the scope of Board of Trade and how business could adhere to it. But I think that actually on the opposite note, she went a lot on focusing on how climate should be competitive in Canada and the role of Burnaby in that. So, first, she just highlighted a lot about the sponsors, which I think that was a very interesting remark, just because the sponsors are RCB, BMW, and Trans Mountain.
Right.
Which, in the context of environment, I think you would expect her to at least not be the one remarking those.
Well, it is sort of funny, because you got a car company, a giant bank, and an energy company.
Yes. And yeah, I don't know. For me, it was a lot like you're trying to talk about climate. It's like you're talking about you're trying to host a vegan kitchen, but your sponsor's like KFC. Right. It's the same thing for me. But anyway, after these highlights, she went a lot on her on adaptation projects. So she tried to highlight how a lot of Canadians feel impacted by climate change already, about the floods here a few years ago, about the villages burning up north, and how the minister is focused on putting funding into those adaptation projects. Which, is, again, I also think it's very interesting to remark that to business, because if you're looking, they are interested in using this fear a lot in terms of usually to be in the market as like a green, it's some type of like greenwashing, but not really. It's like it's an opportunity, it's a gap in the market, right? Everyone is very afraid of the future, and then you get a project that's an adaptation trade instead of actually directly fighting it. And then a few things that she actually highlighted, and then those will touch a lot on my conversation with her. First was about hydrogen and how she's looking over investing more and more in hydrogen, which, as a energy policy student right now, I've been done research on energy policy with Dr. Hira, the chief of the political science department here at SFU, and I think it's just a very interesting place to be at, remarking those. And the second one was about EVs. So how we right now have a gigantic problem because of the tariffs with the U.S. and how, again,
yes, and the federal government has just paused the EV mandate for at least the coming year, and the BC government is sticking with theirs. But anyway, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that I was going to say, and how particularly she's interested in investing more in the industry of IVs again, just because, I mean, it's sustainable, right?
Yeah.
And I'll put quotes in this just because there is a lot to discuss on if hydrogen and electric cars are actually sustainable. Should I skip to my conversation with her?
Sure. Tell us about how that went and what she had to say.
Okay. So first, particularly on public transit, She highlighted that it was not necessarily a reflect of the interest of the business community of Burnaby to discuss this. That's why it wasn't part of her speech. And also how she wasn't aware, actually, apparently, of the deficit that happened here, even though the federal government put from, not sure which minister, but they put a lot of funds into TransLink.
Yeah. She wasn't aware of TransLink's funding challenges?
No, right. Not at all. So particularly on that, we went a little bit further, just discussing in general the importance of this gap and how the federal government should be looking into all cities instead of necessarily cars, but like transitioning just like Europe into more walkable cities. And
right.
We talked shortly about this, and she directly to contact her office to discuss the situation of the gondola, which I never got an answer for.
Right.
And I think that also on the question of energy, she basically directly told me her research and her understanding was that hydrogen was the scope that Canada actually needed in terms of starting this transition, and that she believes that it's a great opportunity so that we are net zero by 2050. Honestly, I'm not a researcher, so I couldn't go directly all against how she was explaining, despite my understanding that even though, for example, SFU is focused on green hydrogen, Canada is basically 95% blue hydrogen. So instead of being renewable energy, we're actually putting a lot of methane into the air.
Okay, so just explain the green hydrogen, blue hydrogen.
Okay, yes. So going on blue hydrogen, the difference is right now hydrogen is not considered clean energy because, first of all, in the world, we have just the hydrogen industry is usually produced with gas, with fossil fuels,
yeah.
Right? So that's not renewable, obviously.
Right.
But particularly on the blue blue hydrogen, what happens is even though the transformation process of the energy can be considered renewable, there's a lot of methane that is put into the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the case of like 95% of Canada, which is actually more damaging than even using fossil fuels.
Right.
So
okay.
When we're talking about green hydrogen, it's just having a direct clean process of direct transformation, which is scientifically very hard right now and a place that would need a lot of investment, and at least quoting my professor, not possible in the near future. So that shouldn't be the focus of our renewable energy if we want to actually be looking at a Canada where we have renewable energy.
Right. Yeah. Great.
Can I just weigh in on something? Are you for the gondola concept to go from production away up to Simon Fraser?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'm not for it. Because,
okay.
And I'm not.
Well, we don't want to get totally distracted.
Well,
into
I mean,
a debate
okay,
about
had
the
he
gondola.
Finished was, I mean, I'm, it takes 50 minutes to take a bus from production way up to here once you're on it. It really is a wrong-headed program. And if people just look at the facts about it, they would, I think, see that the gondola program is a wrong-headed concept.
Well, we're not here to discuss the gondola, but if you want to quickly rebut that since the point has been brought up.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to do it. I think that's the only reason that I brought it to the minister is just a few three quick facts. First, in long term, so in 10 years, it should cost less than buses. So it's a long term investment, yes. As short term, it's more expensive, but if we're looking to a sustainable future in 10 years from now, we're just going to start saving a lot of money. The second is in terms of like environment protection. Despite the little chop of like a few trees on the way, in general, the bus that it takes to the gas that it takes to take the buses up, not only 145 but also 143, which would be combined, is a lot more than a gondola like construction would ever be. And third, it's the interest of a lot of students, and I represent students. I think that more than 95% of students said they wanted the gondola. So,
yeah, I also think one of the other reasons is, of course, it would not be disrupted by the weather in the way that the buses are when we get a big snowfall and we're missing school days and people trapped up here in the mountain.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should come back to that topic in a more comprehensive sense at some point in the future. So what do you feel, what did you feel that, your meeting with the minister, where did it get you? Do you feel it moved forward on your issues or at least establish a relationship?
Particularly, I've used the relationship to further the requests for the gondola with other people. So I recently had a meeting with Jake, the MP for New Westminster, and also the MP, I forgot his name, here for Burnaby.
Yeah.
But I've asked them directly to again touch on the subject when they have the opportunity with the Minister of Environment, Julie, to bring this app back to BC, right? Because mm-hmm. it's not a federal government anymore. They already committed the fund, so it's more of a BC government thing.
Yeah.
And besides of that, it was just great relationships with the Board of Trade, actually. A lot of business interests and looking at diverse like commitments to SFU, but also to the SFSS in terms of events, sponsorships. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, in general, was the results of the meeting and a few of the remarks I could learn to pass on my constituents and the sustainability committee that I'm a part of.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Iago.
Thank you so much.
Iago Moreira, VP Equity and Sustainability for the Simon Fraser Student Society.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Magnus. I hope everyone have a great rest of their day.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. On now with some bird note. This is we'll be back in 2 minutes with a report from Danny Nesvadarani.
This is Bird Note. I'm Bird Note's executive director, Nick Byard, and today kicks off our fall fundraising week. If Bird Note has ever inspired you, educated you, or delighted you with daily immersive stories about the lives of birds, please donate today at birdnote.org. Over the past 20 years, we've been able to reach millions of people with bird songs, calls, and stories thanks to the power of local public radio. If you're listening on the radio, you might know that Congress has revoked hundreds of millions of dollars in funding for stations just like this one, making it harder than ever for public radio to thrive. And while stations have to pay to broadcast many of the programs you love, Bird Note is an independent nonprofit that provides its shows to stations for free. So a gift to Bird Note has a multiplier effect. It helps produce a show you love, and it helps provide free programming for your local public radio station. Support Bird Note and support the future of public radio by donating today at birdnote.org. Maybe consider becoming a recurring monthly donor so that we can count on your ongoing support at whatever level feels good to you. On behalf of all of us at Bird Note, thank you for showing your love of birds and public radio with a gift today at birdnote.org.
This is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Vision Zero Vancouver is a local nonprofit organization that is advocating for one very specific thing: zero deaths and serious injuries on Metro Vancouver streets. An ambitious goal, but one that Vision Zero is continuing to fight for through providing educational resources, advocating for specific policy changes, and public campaigns, including a new Vision Zero public billboard, which aims to raise awareness on unsafe road conditions within Vancouver that are often considered normal. CJSF reached out to Vision Zero for more information on this billboard campaign and what the organization hopes it's able to achieve. We were able to speak with Dylan Pereira, an advocacy coordinator for Vision Zero, on the campaign and the organization's overall objectives.
This is a really critical priority, and that far too many people are injured and die for entirely preventable reasons on roads all across Canada and North America, but particularly here in Metro Vancouver. And yeah, our focus is advocating for measures to help try to make Vision Zero a reality. We tend to place a particular emphasis on more kind of systematic measures. You will see kind of like other sort of traffic safety or awareness campaigns that will be like, hey, pay more attention while you're driving, or, you know, things about like, hey, if you're a pedestrian or a cyclist, you should wear brightly colored clothes so that drivers can see you. And it's not that those things can't be useful, but I think we really want to kind of tackle this from the top down and tackle these kind of like bigger reasons related to like policy and road design.
We then asked Pereira to further explain the billboard, which reads, smoking tables next to non-smoking tables used to be normal too. Join us in fighting for safer streets.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I guess just for anyone listening who hasn't seen our billboard, it's a picture of a large transport truck and a really narrow painted bike lane with like a child riding a bike. And yeah, this should not be normal. It's extremely dangerous. And it's honestly pretty wild to us that this is something that we're kind of expected to accept as normal. And, you know, I mean, just in the same way that in the past, people would say, oh, you're in the smoking section, or if you're not in the smoking section, you're going to be protected from secondhand smoke. That's just absolutely not true. And I mean, I think kind of in a similar way, having like a thin line painted on a road is certainly not doing anything to protect anyone, any road user. I mean, particularly people like children. But yeah, we just want to really highlight that this is really kind of absurd, and this is really wild that this exists. And just because it's normal now, we sort of envision a future where this is no longer normal, and where people look back on things like this and, you know, they're able to see that this is kind of just as strange or just as unsafe as things like smoking sections in restaurants. So
later on, we asked what the community response and engagement has been with this billboard campaign.
Yeah, for the community response, though, it's generally been pretty positive. I feel like we've been getting quite a bit of traction on social media. We've had a few different media outlets reach out to us for comments and interviews about this. I feel like some people are maybe a little bit confused. We had one person in the comments on a social media post saying that bike lanes are the smoking tables and they want to get rid of the bike lanes. So not everybody's going to get it, and that's okay. But I think we also kind of enjoy that we are sort of sparking some conversation. It's kind of cool that we were able to do something that does make people stop and think a little bit. And yeah, we want to spark a conversation and kind of see what this brings up for people.
Lastly, we asked Dylan Pereira what sort of change Vision Zero is hoping to affect within the coming months.
We have a number of campaigns ongoing and a bunch more coming up. And yeah, really a lot of what we do is about trying to, I mean, build awareness in the public, but then to kind of get the public to direct that towards, you know, emailing your counselors, calling your counselors, telling them about your priorities, and when election time comes around, also voting with those priorities in mind.
Once again, that was our interview with Dylan Pereira, an advocacy coordinator for Vision Zero Vancouver, on the organization's new billboard campaign, which promotes the idea of denormalizing unsafe road conditions. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
Thanks to Danny for that. This weekend, CJSF was representing at Neil Young's concert on Saturday night at Deer Lake Park. One of the reasons we were there was because as part of his tour, Neil Young organizes an Earth Village, which is a sort of on the concert site, which brings together a whole bunch of local progressive and community groups to promote their issues and actions to Neil Young's audience. It was I was able to attend myself, and it's a great experience, and really cool to see someone like Neil Young putting their values into action by for sort of providing a platform for local community groups. And what was especially cool about it too is not only did they provide that opportunity, but they were so helpful and so welcoming to the groups involved, most of which were small. I mean, the biggest, there was CJSF was there, and there was a senior, another group, small group, Seniors for Climate Action. There was another group, Young Agrarians, promoting sustainable farming and whatnot. There was a Indigenous community group. The only really big group there was the David Suzuki Foundation, which is in fact quite a large organization. But for the most part, it was small local groups, and you know, we all got to be there for free. A lot of stuff was provided in terms of tents and everything we needed to be part of the community. They also, which was kind of really unusual for this kind of thing, the tour actually, once we got in and set up everything, and just before the gates opened, they actually provided a full meal to all the volunteers participating in the village, which is really quite something as well. So just a shout out to Neil Young. He's been doing this at every stop on his tour, bringing together local groups, and they had people there just to help us set up and get taken care of, which was also really nice. And then when it was time for Neil to go on the stage, of course, the whole plan was, at that point, we quickly packed everything up and the volunteers got to go down and actually watch the show. It was a really good show, and he's playing again tonight, again at Deer Lake Park. It was a good mix of hits and new tracks, and this here is, this song here is one of the new tracks he played on Saturday night. This is called Big Crime, and this is Neil Young and the Chrome Hearts.
Crime in DC.
Young and the Chrome Hearts. That's Big Crime. Big Crime in D.C. and the White House. That's from, well, that's actually a recording from a soundcheck in Chicago some weeks back from the current tour. But once again, Neil Young getting a little political about modern events, as he's done throughout his career.